And welcome to the 277th show of your economic forum entitled The Fallout Continues. Before we begin, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, its staff members, and underwriters. And remember, indices mentioned on this show are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves a risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. This show, Money Matters, is about money. As money does matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, and in some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. Well, have you had enough? The Dow sitting 25,210. And as always discussed on all shows, these large numbers, 25,000, 26,000, 24,000, are regarded as support and resistance levels by technical analysts. No theory, of course, is foolproof, but the analysts do look at these large numbers. They look at other smaller numbers in between, according to what they look like on the charts. But generally accepted principle, these large numbers are resistance or support levels. Now, what does that mean? At 25,210, where the Dow is, 25,210, the large number below us would be 25,000, right? So we look at that as a support level. In other words, if the Dow bounces off that, some technical analysts may think that that's kind of hard to punch down below that and continue to fall. Conversely, at 25,250 now, the Dow's hopping around quite a bit today. The large number above us, 26,000, would be regarded as resistance to be able for the Dow to get through that. I think the all-time high was around a couple of months ago at 26,900 something. And so we've fallen about what? 1,700 points from the high. So is it over? Yes. Have portfolios been hit? Depending on what you're invested in. Obviously, if you hold all CDs or U.S. Treasuries, short-term U.S. Treasuries, probably not, right? I never met anybody that was afraid to open their savings account statement. It doesn't move, right? But if you own equities, stocks, securities, bonds, those things can move around a lot. And so I've penned a few things we can talk about today. And so is it over? You know, who can tell, right? Who can really tell? NASDAQ sitting around 7,243, S&P 2725.76. Most common index referred to on most news media, of course, is the Dow. Now, does your portfolio move in concert with the Dow? If the Dow's down 3%, does your portfolio move down 3%? Or if the Dow's up 10%, does it move up 10%? Probably not. I don't know of any portfolio that would identically mirror the Dow. And so the more cash you have in an account, the less it will move balance-wise as the market moves. Obviously, cash doesn't move anywhere. And the less cash you have, the more volatile the portfolio might be. Depending on what you hold. So for the second time, there was some problems in the bond market. So for the second time in many years, conservative investors, normally they hold bonds, are sweating bullets and seeing red imbalances as bonds tanked a few weeks back. This also means that interest rates conversely probably rose with some reasonable velocity as the two move opposite of each other. Last time this kind of bond thing happened, right after Trump was elected in the fall of 2016. Why does that happen? Well, bonds are generally regarded as moving in an opposite of the Dow. That's not always true. I mean, in the crisis of 08 and 09, we saw an all-out sale just about in everything. But there's a general, what we call modern portfolio theory, MPT, modern portfolio theory, advises for a mix of bonds and stocks as they move opposite. But like I said, not always. Nothing is for sure in markets. Prognostications are really guesses, maybe uneducated guesses, maybe educated guesses, but nobody knows where the market will go in any one time. There are people that are better at it and people that are not as good at it, but that's basically, the long and short of it. It's hard to say. So this bond fall, the speed at which fixed income, which is investments with a fixed return as a prerequisite, fixed income might be preferred stocks or bonds, fell in late 2016 after Trump was elected. That caused news headlines. And we saw headlines on CNBC and some other news outlets that referred to the bond sell-off as carnage in an otherwise what we think of mundane area of investing, which is the bond market. Now, not always. Bond market is not always mundane. And in late 2016, it was not. And just about 4 or 5 weeks ago, we saw the same sort of thing. Not quite as bad as we saw in 2016. But, if we have a conservative, very conservative investor, or, fairly older investor, or maybe we have a 529 college plan as the child approaches college age, generally the target funds are the funds that are expected to be used fairly quickly. They'll hold more and more bonds as they go along because they're not as volatile usually as stocks. And so once again, the bond route made headlines. October 8th, 2018, entitled Bonds in $916 Billion Wipeout Spark Fear of Worst Run Since 1976. That was an article out on CNBC. The author goes on to highlight the eye-popping amount trimmed off aggregate bond prices, which is the $916 billion. That's a lot of money, almost $1 trillion in the overall bond market. No doubt, some conservative investors, thinking their portfolios held investments that were safe and therefore shouldn't move much, like bonds are sometimes regarded as, likely put calls into their advisors or twisted up their brokerage statements as the bond route became reality in the form of declining portfolio bounces. It's never fun to see your portfolio decline. Trust me, we've all been there. The strong U.S. economy, rising inflationary pressures, and the Federal Reserve statements on continuing expected increases in a key rate called the Fed's fund rate may be some of the reasons for the bond sell-off that we saw just a few weeks ago. Bond prices, as I mentioned, generally move opposite of interest rates, whereas if stock prices rise, bonds will tend to fall, or if interest rates rise, bonds will tend to fall. The duration of the bond, in other words, if it's a real short-term bond, like a 30-day treasury, because those roll over a lot, usually interest rates won't affect those much. If you hold like a 30-year bond, then the interest rates can affect those a lot. The longer the bond that you hold, the longer the bond fund invests in longer maturity bonds. In other words, how long the bonds are, 10 years, 20 years, or whatever it is. The longer the bond fund, the longer the bond, generally the more they move when interest rates move. And when interest rates move fast, that really upsets the guys in the bond pits. Generally speaking, markets don't like surprises. And they don't like prices jerking around in either direction. And if they do jerk around in bonds or stocks, then that can disrupt an otherwise calm market, which in my opinion is kind of what we had since Trump was elected. It was kind of on a steady grind upward. As I mentioned, the duration of the bond, of course, has a lot of reason why a particular bond or a bond fund might move. Markets do hate surprises. They hate fast-jerking prices. They apparently may not like tariffs. And for those of you who don't know, we've always said what a bond is. A lot of investors hold bonds. But bonds are IOUs. That's it. They're just an IOU. So when somebody says what a bond is, you just say it's an IOU. You give some of them money and they write you an IOU. And in some cases, we call it bonds. There are corporate bonds, state bonds, federal bonds, as well as a plethora of other bonds. They offer different yields, 2%, 5%, 6%, 4%, whatever, and different maturities, 30 days, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years. Usually the shorter duration bonds are really called, sometimes they call them treasuries, but municipal bonds are usually city bonds that have longer maturities. And they all have different ways they can pay you. Bonds are generally rated from investment grade to junk. they have letters, AAA and AAB and all the way down. And the description from investment grade to junk is kind of self-explanatory. If I told you I had an investment grade bond, that would be a bond that was issued, an IOU that was issued by a company that we might think is financially sound. If we had something called junk bonds, and there are things called junk bonds, the nickname for them is junk bonds. Junk bonds are bonds, IOUs issued from companies and maybe, you know, kind of financially challenged. Sometimes the junk is mixed with better bonds. So you might have a fund that might hold 80% investment grade, and they mix in some junk so they can get the yields up, right? If you had all investment grade bonds, you might get 1% or 2%. If you mixed in some junk, you might be able to boost it to 3% or 4%. But then you've got a portion of the portfolio that is held in junk bonds. Sometimes funds that are called income funds or high yield funds, sometimes they will hold lower graded bonds or junk bonds to spike the yields. Remember, we're in a zero interest rate environment. Now we're kind of in a 1% interest rate environment from the feds. So if you're earning 6 or 7% on your bond fund, you have to ask yourself why. When a company, a very, very strong company, issues a bond, they may only have to pay 0.5% or 0.75%. And they only pay 0.25% or 1% because they don't have to pay any higher. Why would you want to pay higher if you're a company borrowing money? But some companies, or even cities or states, you know, they have to pay more because people perceive them as a little bit more risky. The funds usually don't say junk bond funds, but I think there are a couple of symbols that refer to some funds as junk. But they do have to reveal the rating on everything they hold in their financials. If you have a publicly traded fund, they have to tell you what's in it. Usually bonds hanging around the junk moniker, the junk name, they have a tendency to move more violently than the higher graded stuff, and all of them move opposite of maturity. So junk bonds may move a little bit faster. They probably pay a little bit more. And the longer the bond maturity, you know, a 30-year bond is probably going to pay more than a five-year bond. That's something called the yield curve. That's more complicated, but we've covered it before. Investors can lessen the volatility of their bond portfolio by choosing a shorting duration. In other words, if you choose a 30-year bond and interest rates move, that might move quite a bit. If you chose a 10-year bond, it might not move as much as the 30-year bond. And the reason being is because 30-year bond, you're locked in that interest rate for 30 years. Where a shorter bond, if the interest rates spike, when that bond comes due in a shorter amount of time, they'll roll it over into the higher interest rate. So the longer the maturity of the bond, the more susceptible they are to interest rate movements, and usually they're a little bit more volatile. For now, at least the bond market could be said to have been in turmoil, at least for those investors holding the longer-term ones. Of course, with pain for some also comes pleasure for others. As is usually the case in markets, when somebody loses money, others are happily picking it up on the other side of the trade. Sound advice for all investors is to remain calm through panics, be patient, and if necessary or if you're nervous, review your holdings and make sure you are not overexposed in any one area. I think that's pretty sound advice. Market upsets don't last forever. I guess they could, but historically they have never lasted forever, right? And sometimes running with a stampeding panicked herd can be hazardous to one's portfolio health. In other words, if you sell off in the middle of a panic, sometimes that's not as regarded as being prudent. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, so we'll continue in just a little bit, and we'll come back. My name is Mark Cunaberti, and we'll be right back.
Lots of candy off my mouth. Maybe I'll leave.
And welcome back to your economic forum entitled Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunaberty. Thanks for listening. Last few weeks have seen the markets throw its version of a hissy fit, tossing stocks to and fro, mostly fro, which is to say that stocks went down. Not all stocks went down. There's things, some things do tend to go up when things fall, bucking the trend of the majority of stocks. In any case, investors may have been shell-shocked at the speed and the velocity and the breadth of the market freefall, and which likely decimated the balances of some portfolios. When markets go down and keep going down, it's not a comfortable feeling seeing your hard-earned money evaporate in the smoke-filled room of a market freefall, is it? We've all been there. They say the market is a place of fear and greed. There's a middle ground for common sense. To calm a nervous Nelly, a concerned spouse, or a hardworking family wage earner when seeing dollars quickly disappearing down the rabbit hole of Wall Street. If an investor knew that the market would eventually stop going down, he or she might take more comfort in the knowing of such a fact. And in reality, a fact, it is. But the markets don't always stop going down within the time frame that may be palatable for many. One only has to look at a long-term chart of the Dow, or most indexes for that matter, to witness a long, but definitely interrupted, line rising from left to right, basically meaning over time, things tend to keep rising. That the markets do tend to rise given enough time, at least historically, at times, the period that makes up the route can be nerve-wracking. In other words, it can be dropping for a while, and it can make you very, very nervous. Obsessive thoughts of losing it all tend to gnaw on the consciousness of many, which could cause a lack of sleep, high blood pressure, anxiety, and a host of other emotions that, for the most part, make life a miserable experience, at least monetarily, if not momentarily. But those momentary moments can seem like an unbearable march through hell when markets refuse to stop falling day in and day out. That the markets over time have a rising shape to them when looked at through decades, we must also note that there have been times when it took a very long time for the market to recoup the damage done in a major sell-off. During those long periods of waiting to break even again can frustrate investors as portions of their paycheck go into the black hole of an IRA or other stock account, only to somehow disappear as balances may stagnate or fall. The imagination of investors tends to be what if, tends to go on the bias of what if, meaning instead of the comfort of believing in optimistic outcomes, the mind tends to dwell on the worst case scenarios. That is not to say that I believe in hold for the long term. Indeed, one could say that about real estate as well as stocks, but I'm of the opinion had the Feds not rescued the 08-09 economic implosion, which in reality came close to destroying the entire financial system of not only the U.S., but our big round ball called Earth, life on the planet would have changed for a very long time, and not in a good way. That is, if you believe what the central bankers of the world told us as they showered trillions into almost every financial nook and cranny that bled red. Without such a life raft from the Fed, it may have been quite possible that entire fortunes would have been obliterated, along with millions of IRAs, pension plans, life savings, and what have you. Some say the central bankers of the world could not possibly rescue us again if another catastrophe occurred of such magnitude as we saw in 08 and 09, claiming they just don't have the quiver of monetary arrows that they had back then. Basically, they shot a lot of those arrows off last time. And some say they couldn't repeat the performance even if they wanted to if faced with such an event as we had in 08 and 09. I truly can't say if that's the case or not, but it does make one ponder a few things, none of which will help you sleep better at night. We would all like to trust that the Fed and their other global counterparts, the central banks of the world, would have things under control should another market rout turn into an all-out freefall. After all, they had things entirely under control in 08 and 09, right? Or did they? We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
can someday pass on by. I'll be working here forever, at least until I die. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. I'm supposed to get a raise next week, you know damn well I won't. Working for a living, working, working for a living. They're giving, cause I'm working for a living. Hey, I'm not complaining, cause I really need to work. But hitting up my buddies got me feeling like a jerk. $100 condo, $200 rent. I get a check on Friday, but it's already spent. Working for a living, working, working for a living. They're giving, cause I'm working for a living.
And you're tuned to KVMR FM in Nevada City. And also on community radio stations here and there, of course. It's carried on about 65 other stations at some point. And so welcome to all of those who are listening. And if you're hearing a recorded version of the show, which is today is Thursday, November 15th, 12:33 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So you may hear the show at a different time. Phone in lines 530-265 9555 530-265 9555 if you'd like to call in, make some comments for sure. Be glad to hear that. And so yeah, we have to talk about strategies. The Dow's up 186 now. We have about 27 minutes to the market closes. We'll see if it can hold it. You know, last couple of days, markets run in the morning and then fallen at the end of the day. So, well, hopefully we'll see if the Dow can stay up, see if the market can stay up through the close. That would probably be not a bad sign, right, instead of these routes at the end of the day. So we'll take a look. But so we have to talk about strategies. With the Dow falling hard over the last few weeks and the S&P touching below its 50-day moving average for the third time in 7 years, investors may have found themselves wringing their hands in fear and frustration. 2011 and 2015 marked the last time the S&P fell under its 50-day average indicator, and in those 2 years, the correction continued for months. Now, that's kind of a technical thing, but it is a 200-day moving average and a 50-day moving average. So it doesn't move as much during a day because it's averaging 50 days. And so the end of the curve there is the average of the last 50 days that preceded it. The 50-day moving average is one of many technical indicators analysts might consider when trying to forecast where and when markets may move. And you can, you know, Google up 50-day average and you'll see what it is, and Google up the 200-day average. The 50-day average of an index is considered by some a serious indicator of possible things to come. Now, we did see what we call a death cross. It sounds ominous, and by no way is it a 100% predictor. But a death cross is when the 50-day moving average moves under the 200-day moving average, and that just kind of occurred. in the Russell anyway, Russell index. No one can forecast market direction. I want to be clear on that. And a 50-day indicator, like all indicators, is not without its detractors and skeptics. But if an indicator isn't reliable, why use it? The answer to that question may be a simple one, because none of the indicators or market theories are foolproof, so you might use this one as well as the next one. In reality, just because the S&P continued in correction in 2011 and 15 after falling through its 50-day moving average back then, it isn't a foregone conclusion that it'll repeat its dismal performance this time around. Historical reactions and events are good to look at, but we can never predict 100% that it'll recur. Although it's not a good thing the S&P did break this average, and many would argue far from it, markets, like a herd of wild animals, can turn on a dime or a day. And forecasting what something might do because of what it did in the past can be treacherous. At the time that I wrote this this text, which is about a week ago, the S&P, regarded as a major market index, had fallen about 9.3%. 10% is regarded as a correction territory, and once it's down 10%, some analysts think that that's a precursor of more bad things to come, mainly more falling stock prices and therefore more investor pain. Like I said, the Russell did just form the death cross 50-day moving average, which moves faster than the 200-day, did cross below the 200-day, and that is what some people call the death cross. All the various indicators, averages, nominal stock and index levels, and other methods are used to forecast imminent direction by some. There is, again, no hard or fast rule or theory that you can rely on. No doubt, the market has not been in this kind of funk for a while. And fall can be the season for falls, so some believe. But buying or selling stocks based on a theory of some sort is probably not the best action for the average investor to take. Some very, very astute analysts might practice that in that portfolio, but the average investor really doesn't follow the 50-day moving averages and 200-day moving averages. To better weather these radical stock market movements without buying or selling the farm entirely, it may be easier just to lighten up on stocks. If and when you reach the sleepless or restless stage of the investing universe, right? In other words, if declining balances are starting to make you lose sleep, you may consider lightening up on equities and going to more cash. I personally use a combined strategy of setting some predetermined selling levels of stocks and indexes that I may have bought, as well as taking into consideration a variety of indicators and theories that I look at. My goal, whether it's mine or portfolios, is to protect the majority of principal while slowly lightening up on the portfolio if markets continue to fall. I do this by selling some holdings and moving more and more into cash if markets move further south. In a nutshell, moving into more cash posture, more cash than less stocks, by selling some positions will lessen the movements both up and down of the portfolios in question. In the extreme, if one goes to all cash, there will be no movement. But an all cash position is a rare position, at least for me. The point is, the more cash you have in lieu of stocks, the less you will lose in downturns, and on the flip side, the less you will make if the market decides to turn north again. One final word, which I think is important to all investors. Make sure you have some sort of exit strategy to possibly help prevent against a catastrophic wipeout. Without an exit strategy, you may be setting yourself up for more pain than you can afford, both mentally and monetarily. So, the Dow is sitting at 179. We've got 20 more minutes to go. 530-265-9555 is the number you can call. And so we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. Markets are a place where, you know, if somebody doesn't want to look at negative balances, you don't want to lose money. Obviously, there are things that are guaranteed not to lose value, like a CD or a savings account. There are other investment products that I won't get into that we've covered before, but I won't get into today, that also offer the same sort of protection. But some of the guarantees are from the U.S. government, and some of them are not. Some of them are maybe from insurance companies or what have you. And so there are a variety of different vehicles for people, depending on their risk level and what they can tolerate. You know, I have found when I meet with investors or clients is that the amount of tolerance that they say they can put up with. Like a guy comes in, he says, yeah, I got 100 grand, I can tolerate a 10% loss, or I got 400 grand, I can tolerate a 10% loss, or whatever it is. You know, the amount that that they can tolerate, that they tell me, is always less in actuality than what they tell me. So they could say they could tolerate a 10% loss, but you can bet the phone's going to ring if they see a 3% loss. 530-265-9555. I did see a caller come in and then he went away. So that number is available, 530-265-9555. And so I do believe strongly an exit strategy is very important. You know, you can't just ride it all the way down, in my opinion. You know, I've always used the analogy when people goes into a casino. Some of you have hit the casino, played a slot machine. And when you play a slot machine, normally, unless they have some sort of problem, behavioral addiction or something, normally they will draw a line in the sand. And when they're lost $100 or $200, they'll get out. And so we'll continue in just a second. We got a call. Hi, you're live on the air with Money Matters.
Normally, they...
We have a delay, so you have to turn that down.
I already did. Thanks, Mark. Yeah, if I go hold too long, it goes into the... You've been disconnected.
Ah, there you go. Anyway, who's this?
This is Ross.
Hi, Ross. How are you?
Glad to talk to you again. I'm very good. Haven't talked to you since one of the last seminars you gave.
Ah, good. Thank you.
Which has been, yeah, it's very nice. I've got two quick questions, Mark. Remember when they had the 1,000 point drop? It was some kind of computer glitch, and the SEC instituted some type of an automatic shutoff switch if that should happen again. Does that still exist, and has it been updated since 1,000 was a different percentage of the market back when it happened? It was a scary percentage, right?
Yeah, they have.
It wouldn't be so scary now, but is there a cutoff switch for that kind of?
Yeah, there are. They're called circuit breakers, and the majority of circuit breakers were installed in 1987. After the route that we saw there, it saw 30-something percent. There are circuit breakers. Various circuit breakers where Dow drops a certain amount, they'll stop trading for 15 minutes.
And you know what? Is it a percentage or is it a fixed amount?
Usually it's percentage. They'll say, because you know the Dow's always moving, right? So they wouldn't say 1,000.
Well, last time I knew, it was like 1,000. It was sold on the news as 1,000 point drop would institute these circuit breakers to start. And I never heard further if they were still in use, if they had been changed, if it had been changed to a percentage, like it sounds like it has.
The circuit breakers are still there, yeah. And if it gets bad enough, they'll stop the trading for a whole day. So the circuit breakers are still there.
You got me thinking about your exit strategy, and mm-hmm. that's kind of an exit strategy for the entire market. If you look at it like that, right?
Just there are
stop the market completely during that stoppage. Can people change their market exposure by calling their broker? The market's closed.
There are detractors from that. And basically, what they will say is that if you stop the markets from trading, okay, mm-hmm. in hopes of calmer brains will prevail at when they open them again, a lot of people will say that it'll just pile up the orders.
That's what I was thinking. That was my question, kind of. Doesn't it make a tsunami of orders when the bell rings in the morning?
It can, but it's also meant to calm people. But the circuit breakers right now, they're using some on the S&P 500 index. They halt the nation's stock markets at 7, 13, and 20% of the closing price of the previous day.
Okay.
So and they'll halt them for, you know, the further the market drops, from what I understand, they'll halt it. Now, there are detractors from this. You know, they'll basically say, well, if you halt them, then you'll get a bunch of piling up in the back. And when you halt them, people will start to panic. They don't usually advertise, at least during the day, when they'll halt them.
How much of this motivation to change orders is computer-driven, Mark, and how much is... Are people still doing day trading? I thought that fell out of style.
There's
back in style now. How much of this market is controlled by actual investors, individual people?
Well, there's, you know, there is a, you know, a event they call a, you know, either a fat finger, which they say may have caused the 1,000-point drop that day. But there are, you know, pension plans and big broker dealers. The broker dealer might be somebody like Schwab. The broker part of it is he sells you the stocks. The dealer part of it is they maintain their own inventory. And so they will have a variety of concentrations in the market. And generally what we think is when we see these huge, fast moves, we are seeing computer-generated stops and computer-generated sells or buys.
In my opinion, the computers are the greatest threat to the market stability, and they're the part that's growing the fastest, in my opinion.
And they have
taken advantage of the newer computers that can do the trades faster and faster.
And you know, you have to remember that they have these things called high frequency trading. Have you read about that?
Does it involve shortening the actual length of copper wire to the trading?
I guess you could say
that. It's a real estate war of meters to get your trade to the stock exchange floor that much easier. I think they changed something about how they take the incoming signal, and they have
algorithms that attempt to trade in advance of those incoming orders.
Right. Well, didn't the stock exchange try to make it so that
they try?
You couldn't game the system by picoseconds, but you're saying that they tried, but it's not possible to undo physics.
Well, you know, you'd also mentioned that they used to use a point drop rule. Remember, you just mentioned that a little while ago about a certain amount of points. They stopped that in 97, and they went to a percentage thing. And they also have something they call Rule 48. Rule 48 is where they speeds up the opening by suspending the requirement that stock prices be announced at the market open. In other words, prices generally have to be approved by stock market floor managers before trading actual begins. But without that approval, when they instigate Rule 48, then stock trading can begin a lot sooner. But you know, the piling up of the orders, it can be problematical. Hey, I've got another call coming in. Did you want to ask any more questions?
Think about offering some advice to people with 401ks, because they can't put a stop order in.
You can put a stop order in with your broker.
You can't put a stop order for a 401k that's controlled by your company. No.
No, you can't do that. No.
So people, and most people are exposed to the market through those type of investment devices, right?
You're
so
at the mercy of them. Yep,
you're at the mercy.
You're at
so
the mercy
maybe
of them.
You know, try to give people a little bit of help in that regard without telling them just to put everything into a market match, which is hard to do, too. You can't just do a market match. It's very tough. They want to stick you in a Russell or something else. Thank you, Mark, for your information. You're a great font of it, and I look forward to hearing you every week.
Thank you.
Okay,
we have to realize is that you know, having an exit strategy, in my opinion, is extremely important. And so that's why I always keep professing to having an exit strategy. Hi, you're live on the air with Money Matters. Who's this?
Hi, this is James, and I just wondered, what do you think about shorting PG&E, perhaps ultra shorting?
You know, the regulators forbid me from making specific recommendations. So I can't even comment on that. They would call me up probably when I walked out of the studio if I said anything like that.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry about that. Okay. Any other question? Okay, he's gone. Yeah, boy. Yeah, no, no, I can't say anything like that. I can't give specific stock recommendations. So, but, you know, when you look at all these things on how PG&E is going to be, we're referring to the wildfires, obviously. And, you know, apparently on the news, it was like PG&E was going to get sued, and so people are going to say short PG&E. Well, usually, I will tell you that when the news hits the news, the public news, the price is already, it is said, priced into the stock. I mean, everybody in the world knows that PG&E may be sued. So there are, you know, heavy hitters that will trade PG&E stock believing that they will lose money and lose the suit and have to pay a lot of money or their insurance will. And so they have already acted. So usually when, you know, what we think is logical. Like in the wintertime, gas will go up in price and propane will go up. And Apple will sell a lot of iPhones. What you think is normal speak, market speak, it's already priced in. It's already priced in. There's a theory that says all stocks are exactly what they're valued at that moment, including all the news that is known. The exception to that would be private news, which is illegal. You cannot trade on private news that is not public. Do people do it? Yeah, I'll let you draw your own conclusions on that one, right? You see people that are arrested by the SEC for doing that, insider trading or insider information. Even if an insider tells somebody else that's not related to the company, that is illegal. So does it happen? Well, when I see a stock, drop $2-3 before they post their earnings, and then they post their earnings and the stock drops $10, did it happen? I don't know. I'm not allowed to really say it does happen. But we do know that the SEC does arrest people on it, so, and they have convicted people on it, so it does happen. When you have 401, obviously you can't put a stop in. If you do put a stop, you can't initiate a stop with your broker on a brokerage account or some of the other IRAs where you're traded yourself or your advisor do it. You can put a stop in. There's two types of stops, stop limit and a stop. A stop basically says if the stock falls to a certain amount, you put in a sell order. So let's say you have a stock at 50 and you want to stop out at 40. If you put a stop in, when 40 is hit by the stock, your order becomes a market order. So you may not get $40. Whenever your order comes up in line, your order becomes a market order. So you say, I want a stop order at 40. When it hits 40, you now have a market order. So wherever your trade comes in line is where they're going to execute you. You could have a stop. I've had stops executed at a bit higher price than where my stop was because the stop it turned into market order and the stock turned around at that moment. And I've had stops that are executed a lot lower. Now, we did see during a 1,000-point drop that this gentleman referred to 4 or 5 years ago. I had a show that day, and I was driving into the studio, and my 92-year-old dad was on the phone. And he said, hey, the market's down 200. And I said, oh, yeah. And then I drove like 600 feet further on Highway 49 out here. And he said, now it's down 400. And I said, what? And then he said, no, it's down 700. And I said, Dad, you're reading it wrong. He says, no, I'm not. And I got in the studio. I left my house. It was down 100 or something. I got in the studio. It was down 1,000. And I went, wow. And what we probably saw there was an avalanche of computer-driven sell orders, probably. Now, people that had stops in, I know that a lot of people that got burned on stops. So they may have had a stop at a particular stock at 50, and they got executed at 30. And then a half hour later, the stock was at 60 again. And so they looked at the stock market charts at the end of the day, and they see their stock didn't move. It opened at 50 and closed at 50, and they got executed at 30. And they said, hey, what happened? Now, the feds did suspend a small portion of those trades in the middle of the day when it was at its worst. But people on the other side of that time period, some of them got railed. And so now on the other side, a stop becomes a market order. You could have a stop limit order. Now, a stop limit order basically says if the stock hits, in our example, 40, I want out at 40. And if I don't get 40, I don't want out. So stock falls to 40. Let's say it's falling fast. Your order says, I want 40, and I will take no less. It's a stop limit. If the stock fell below 40 before your trade got to the front of the line, if it was then at 39, you won't get out. So if your stop limit order is to stop you from losing money, which stop limit orders will attempt to do that, but there's no guarantee they will, and stop orders are kind of the same thing. You could fall through 40 and never get your trade executed. So a stock could be at 50. You could have a stop limit at 40. Come home one night and you see the stock's at 20, thinking you got out at 40 and you never got sold out. And you call and you say, hey, why didn't I get sold at 40? And he said, because you had a stop limit order. You said you wanted out at 40 and the stock blew through 40 downward before your order executed. So there are two different orders there. Entering orders ahead of time, you can enter a stop. They're usually good for 60 days. There is a rumor on, I wrote an article on running the stops. I don't know if the regulator is going to let me talk about that because I did write an article and let me squash that. So I better not touch on that. But so we'll just move on from there. So the Dow, let's take a look at the Dow because we're running to the close of the show here. And we'll see where we are. So we got 5 minutes before the market closes. And let's kind of see where we sit here. So the Dow, has it fallen through? And see where we are. The Dow, as we sit now, is up 176. So could it fall 176 points in 4 minutes? Sure, it can do anything it wants. But we'll track it. It's down 170. It's up 171, 172. So it's moving around. So we'll see if we can close on an up note today. That doesn't mean tomorrow it'll be a better day, but it is better than dropping every day of the week, as you saw. Okay, so I'd like to just thank you for listening to the show today. It's show 277, The Fallout Continues. All the shows are available eventually on moneymanagementradio.com. That is a free website. We don't charge for anything there. And it's our way, community radio station's way, of saying thank you for listening to the station. I put out a newsletter there. Videos are on there and other things, and it's all totally au gratis. Our way of saying thank you for listening to community radio station. We want to give back to you because you support us. So check out your community radio station, your websites, and how you can support your local stations. And, of course, all stations, of course, would probably want your support. You can even volunteer. People need to volunteer and do things of this sort. Okay, so 277, The Fallout Continues. This has been show 277. And remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only, or the opinions of the authors or people I might have on the show, and they do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, and staff members or underwriters. Indices mentioned are unmanaged, cannot be invested in directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. So we covered markets, bonds, strategies to perhaps address principal preservation. And it's been my pleasure talking to you today. I'll be on again first week of December. Wow, well, time is going fast. And you can always send me a email through the program director at whatever station you're hearing this on. Thanks a lot for listening. God bless. Have a great day. And our prayers and support go out to the people that have been ravaged by these horrendous fires in the state of California and beyond. So heartfelt condolences for those that have passed and their families. And hopefully we can all recover from this. So if you can help support your community, I would urge you to do so. Thanks a lot. Don't get me.